It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
God, this dialogue is shit.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
There was a lot going on last night, and I'm not even talking about the Tyson Fury fight. GCW set their new attendance record last night at the Showboat in Atlantic City for their Fight Club show, with Jon Moxley beating Nick Gage to retain the GCW title. So Moxley is going to be sticking around for a while. Leo Rush, who just returned to AEW, he made a surprise appearance wrestling last night, as did Thunder Rosa. As did Chelsea Green, who did not wrestle on the GCW show, although she was in two places at once. She was live at the GCW show, and she also did wrestle for Impact at the same time. But she was there to help Matt Cardona reclaim his internet championship. And the Briscoes, Jay and Mark from Ring of Honor, making a surprise appearance to accept the challenge of the GCW tag champs, who said there was no one left for them to beat. Well, that's no longer true. But they're back tonight at the Showboat for the aftermath with Minoru Suzuki, who's been making the rounds quite a bit in recent weeks here on his U.S. tour. Minoru Suzuki against Joey Janela in the main event tonight. And they made it official. GCW will invade the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City on Sunday, January 23rd. That is a 2,500-seat venue, and I have no doubt that they're going to sell it out for their first show there. I've been saying it for a few weeks now, and I talked about GCW just recently, and I think it's true. GCW right now to wrestling is what ECW was over 20 years ago. Now, they may not have the TV that ECW had. They may not even have the TV that Impact has right now or Ring of Honor has. But I think GCW now is the de facto number three promotion in this country behind WWE and AEW. It's like they've replaced PWG as the hot indie place to be. They are the hot in thing now. I don't know how long they can sustain that for, but that is exactly what it feels like right now. And Impact Wrestling, I want to shout out Impact for its Knockouts Knockdown tournament last night. I said it was a busy night last night. I watched a good chunk of it, and it was refreshing to see, coming off of the all-women's NWA show that Mickie James produced back in August, which I also watched, coming off those completely forgettable, embarrassing Queen's Crown matches that WWE gave us on SmackDown Friday night. I mean, WWE has completely taken a shit on its women's division lately, especially in terms of just how rushed and inconsequential all of these matches feel. Impact last night went the opposite way, and they put on a tournament that actually showcased the ladies. Mercedes Martinez, fired by WWE in August, picked up the win to earn herself a future match for the Knockouts title. The Iconics have signed here. They'll be debuting as the Inspiration at Bound for Glory later this month. I was never a big fan of the Iconics act, but I heard they were having visa problems, so I'm happy they found work. Awesome Kong was announced as the next inductee into the Impact Hall of Fame. She came out to cut a nice promo, which she also did at that NWA Women's Show, where she announced her retirement. And now she's going into the Hall of Fame. The actual induction will take place at Bound for Glory. And they also paid tribute to Daphne with a 10-bell salute at the start of the show and then a very nice video package later in the night. That was a very classy move on their part. You know, the past regime in that company did that woman dirty, and it was nice to see them pay their respects last night. What WWE did with their Queen's Crown was not even the most disgraceful story in women's wrestling this week. That belongs to another promotion, which hasn't even run its first show yet. I'm going to talk about that, plus the WWE draft, the King of the Ring, MLW Fightland, Undertaker's Netflix movie, and a lot more. This is episode 725 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, October 10th, 2021. I remember it like it was yesterday, talking about Impact's big 10-10-10 reveal on the podcast. And here we are, 11 years later. First of all, thank you for all the birthday wishes. I got a lot of very nice messages this week. And everybody who came out, and not just super chatted, but hung out with me and everything on Wednesday night during the Dynamite stream, you made that a very fun birthday, and thank you very much for that. And don't forget, the new 14-year anniversary t-shirt is up in our store on prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. We have it in black, we have it in white, whatever size you need, from small all the way up to the multiple XL sizes. I don't know what the limit is on Pro Wrestling Tees, but it gets up there. So if you want to pick up a t-shirt, that is the place to be. We're going to be celebrating 14 years next month. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. Right-hand side of the page, you'll see the PayPal button staring you right back in the face. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out like these fine folks here. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, who sent me a very nice message this week. Thank you, Paul. Night Stalker, Naif Al-Safar, John Loose Cannon Lopez, West Coast James Herrera, Big Bear, Brian Becerra, Killshot, Keith Hart, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichert, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soeb, Ostentatious Alan Carter, John Raging Mad Riffle, Always So Mad, Raging Mad, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Sherrod, Big Daddy Boyd, Caleb Showtime Lindley, The Alabama Assassin, Chris Young, The Pastor of Pain, Damian Yule, Tony Baloney McCall. That's a better name than Tony D'Angelo. Tony Baloney. Last Man Standing, Al Alvarez. Sweet Sapphire, Sarah, I want to give her a shout out. Thank you for the birthday card. Abbas in Iraq has a birthday coming up this week, so happy birthday to him. And J-Wall, Jacob Walton, who runs a fan-made Saw YouTube series called The Jigsaw Blogs, a show for the diehard Saw fan that takes place in the Saw film universe and leads into the movie Spiral from the Book of Saw. The show follows the character of a history teacher named Jacob, who answers lots of unanswered questions about the series, documents every known event the Jigsaw Killer and his accomplices are responsible for. If you are a Saw fan, this is the series for you. Check out the Jigsaw Blogs on YouTube. And shout out to Alvin. And I almost said Alvin and the Chipmunks. Alvin and the People's Choice Podcast. Search for it on YouTube under the People's Choice Podcast or the People's Choice Podcast channel. Or Alvin and the Chipmunks, whatever floats your boat. You can, either way, you can go on YouTube and search for it. And don't forget, the Audible link is still good as well. Want to offer you guys one free book when you use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. The link is back up and working. You can get one free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. All of our YouTube channel members got a two-part Q&A this week, two-part video Q&A. Part one was over half an hour long. Part two went up on Friday afternoon, in case you missed it, and that was over 50 minutes. So you got almost a total of 90 minutes of Q&A out of me this week. That's for all channel members. If you are not a channel member on YouTube, I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to the YouTube channel. All the details are there, or hit me up, and hopefully you guys will come up with some even more questions for me. We'll be doing more of these video Q&As in the weeks to come. Some sad news. Reggie Parks, the iconic wrestling belt maker and a pretty good wrestler himself in his day. You know, Stu Hart took him under his wing and helped train him. He died this week at the age of 87 after a short battle with COVID-19. He had just attended the annual Cauliflower Alley Club Convention in Las Vegas last month, so this was all very sudden. It wasn't as if he was in poor health for a long time. He wrestled a lot of big names from that era. He was in the ring with Ric Flair and Harley Race, Dusty Rhodes, Dory Funk Jr., Mad Dog Vachon, Terry Allen, before he became Magnum T.A. The guy was strong as an ox. It's kind of what he was known for, you know, back in his prime. He looked like he was chiseled out of stone. and he was dubbed the man with the cast iron stomach. And there's some great promotional photos of him in the piece that Greg Oliver did on the Slam Wrestling website. There's this image of him letting a Volkswagen Beetle drive over his stomach. Nothing but a towel over his stomach. And here this car is just driving over his midsection. There's also another kind of old-timey ad for a Bella's department store. Not to be confused with the other Bella's. The Bella's department store, they have this illustration of a man laying on the ground while somebody jumps off a ladder onto them. This ad has got to be over 50 years old. And see, they were doing high spots even back then, jumping off fucking ladders and stuff. But in the ad, it says, "Don't miss this amazing feat of strength. Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m., Reggie Parks will permit someone in the crowd to jump from a high ladder directly upon his stomach of iron." And that was the gimmick they were doing, I guess, at the department store before the promotion was having a show, I think, either later that night or later that week. But that's what he was known for. But it was 57 years ago, while he was wrestling in Omaha, Nebraska for Joe Dusek, that Dusek had this 6-foot-tall tag team trophy that would fall apart if he even touched it. And his tag team partner at the time, Doug Gilbert, I mean, and Reggie probably had more than a dozen different partners in his career. You know, Danny Hodge, he said, was his favorite. But here it was Gilbert, and it was Gilbert who suggested that they design some championship belts instead of using this crappy trophy, and the promoter agreed that that would be a good idea. That was the beginning of Reggie Parks, the belt maker. You know, if you grew up a fan of the golden era of the WWF, or if you grew up a fan in mid-80s NWA, WCW, AWA, then you were a fan of this man's work. You may not even realize it, but you were a fan of this man's work. Some of the best title belt designs ever are credited to this man, including my favorite all-time championship belts. He either created or helped create the classic Winged Eagle WWF Championship, my all-time favorite. I have it proudly displayed on my wall behind me. And, you know, my only regret is that I never got one handcrafted by Reggie Parks himself. $2,500 is what it would have cost me. At a time where I didn't have that kind of money just laying around, there was no way I could justify, even if I had the money, I don't think there's any way I could justify spending $2,500 on that, at least not at that time. But he also did the classic Intercontinental title, held by the likes of Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. That was a Reggie Parks belt. The WWF tag team titles held by the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Legion of Doom, Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, countless others. Again, Reggie Parks. The NWA television title. The WCW US title. Even titles I didn't know he was responsible for, like the TNA X Division title. And the Ring of Honor World title, the first one. And the IWGP heavyweight title, which was another one of my favorites. I had no idea that he was responsible for the IWGP design. And he did some of the early UFC title belts. The man was a legend. I only wish I could have added a handmade Reggie Parks belt to my collection. Those designs of his are going to long outlive him. His belts still look better than most of the ones that you see today. The 2021 WWE Draft is in the books. I covered the final night live after Raw on Monday, and boy, was that a mistake. I thought the show 2 weeks ago was more enjoyable than usual, but I cannot say the same about whatever the hell that was on Monday. I mean, that was brutal to sit through. This is how the Raw and SmackDown rosters now stack up. Now, keep in mind, all of these changes do not go into effect until October 22nd, so that is the day after the Crown Jewel pay-per-view. Both lists include names that were drafted after Raw went off the air on Monday, so these are the complete lists as they exist right now for Raw and SmackDown. Monday Night Raw has drafted WWE Champion Big E, which you had to expect, Bobby Lashley, Bianca Belair, the SmackDown Women's Champion Becky Lynch, which had to happen. Once they took Bianca, They had to bring Becky over as well. I mean, it just would have made what happened at SummerSlam and since SummerSlam look so much worse. So they had to draft both of them to the same show. Of course, where Becky goes, so goes Seth Rollins. So he is now on Raw, as is Edge. We have the United States champion, Damian Priest. Raw tag team champions, Randy Orton and Matt Riddle. AJ Styles and Omos are staying right where they are on Raw. The women's tag team champions, Rhea Ripley and Nikki Cross. Finn Balor is now on Monday Night Raw, as is Kevin Owens, Keith Bearcat Lee, the Street Profits, and per PW Insider. What did I say on the podcast a couple of weeks ago? And we get a report this week now from PWI that there was serious consideration internally given to breaking up the Street Profits and sending Montez Ford to Raw, which is where Bianca Belair is, and having Angelo Dawkins go to SmackDown. Now, it didn't happen, but there was serious consideration given to splitting up this team. And right now, you've got Angelo Dawkins on his hands and knees, hands clasped like that prayer emoji, looking up at the heavens, thanking his lucky stars that they came to their senses and did not break up the Street Profits. Rey and Dominic Mysterio are now on Raw. Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, or I should say Big Bob. You saw Raw Monday, you know what I'm talking about. Big Bob. Big Bob. That's the new name they're trying to get over. Big Bob. Karrion Kross, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, Liv Morgan, Nia Jax, Tamina, John Morrison, The Miz, Zelina Vega, Mia Yim, who has not been seen on television. I don't know that she's been on television at all this year. She's pretty much been gone ever since Keith Lee disappeared, right? With all the COVID stuff and everything. And I don't know that she was on television before that. I mean, maybe she was still doing Retribution stuff at the very beginning of the year. It's been a long time since we've seen Mia Yim on TV, but she's going to Raw. Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, Otis and Chad Gable, Apollo Crews and Commander Aziz, Doudrop, Dana Brooke, Tegan Knox, Akira Tozawa, T-Bar, R-Truth, Reginald, the 24/7 champion, Jackson Riker, Veer, Austin Theory from NXT, who made his main roster return on Raw Monday night. He came out, he was doing some stuff with Jeff Hardy where he wanted to take a selfie and he was paying his respects to Jeff Hardy. My God, you're an inspiration. I watched you when I was a kid. And then he turned on him and he clotheslined him and dropped him and then took a selfie anyway and then walked out. So he's already on Raw. Drake Maverick from NXT now officially back on Raw. He's been on TV the last few weeks. And in a surprise move that I think was done just for the sake of being a surprise, 2021 Olympic gold medal winner Gable Steveson, who just signed a contract weeks ago with this company, is now on Monday Night Raw. And he is nowhere close to being ready. He has not trained to be a pro wrestler, let alone even had a match. Although there's a lot of, you know, obviously hope that he'll turn out to be something like the next Kurt Angle or Brock Lesnar. I mean, he's got the pedigree. He's got the Olympic gold medal. He's obviously a great amateur wrestler. He's a big wrestling fan, has been since he was a kid. He's got all the tools that you would think, certainly athletically. I mean, charisma-wise, personality-wise, character-wise, that remains to be seen. But athletically, he's got every gift you could possibly ask for. So he may go on, who knows, he may go on to be one of the all-time greats. But he's certainly not main roster TV ready at this point. But it looks like they're just getting him primed for a TV spot next year. I think they just wanted to make the announcement. Now, of course, if he was such a big get, you could ask the question, well, then why was he drafted dead last? You know, if you think about it in those terms, if he's such a hot commodity, why didn't he go in the first or second round of this draft? Although I guess that's where the inexperience comes in. Anyway, he's on Raw, but I would not expect to see him on TV until next year. Because if they put him on TV any sooner, I just think that's incredibly dumb. Now, SmackDown has drafted the Universal Champion, Roman Reigns. Fox was basically looking at WWE going, don't you dare even think about it. So Roman Reigns is staying put right where he is. Raw Women's Champion Charlotte Flair now on SmackDown. Drew McIntyre, Sasha Banks, The Usos, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, thus once again breaking up the New Day. King Nakamura, who I guess is no longer the king, so now he's back to being Shinsuke. And Rick Boogs, Sheamus, Cesaro, Shayna Baszler, Naomi, Jeff Hardy, who on Raw Monday night after his loss to Damian Priest was cutting a promo. This is before Austin Theory came out to lay him out. And it seemed without, he didn't say the name, but it certainly seemed as if he was teasing the possibility with what he was saying, talking about egos and things of that nature. The possibility that we might actually get a Willow appearance on WWE television in the not too distant future. He's done interviews talking about how he would love to bring the character to WWE. He's never had the chance to portray Willow on WWE television. Of course, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you remember the days of the Impact reviews when I would talk about Willow and the metal object and all the Willow stuff that was going on that show. We may be getting Willow on WWE television very soon. We may be getting Willow against Roman Reigns. Sami Zayn, staying on SmackDown. Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss, the Viking Raiders, Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo, Ricochet, Drew Gulak, Mace, who actually got some promo time on SmackDown Friday night. Mace and T-Bar are no more. Mansoor, Mustafa Ali, Jinder Mahal and Shanky, so Veer is all by himself on Raw. Natalya, Tony Storm, Shotzi Blackheart, Hit Row from NXT. And by the way, they have since announced a North American title match with Isaiah Swerve Scott defending the championship against Santos Escobar. So that's going to be how they get the title off of him. Among the worst North American champions of all time in NXT history is Isaiah Swerve Scott. And I don't even say that as somebody who, you know, thinks he's a bad wrestler. I don't have anything bad at all to say about Swerve Scott. I was very happy to see him finally, you know, find his footing in NXT and surround himself with people in this faction and start getting more TV time, because he was just completely directionless for so long. And he hit upon this Hit Row thing, and then they put the championship on him, and he proceeded to have the most uneventful reign in the history of that entire company on that brand. And it's not even his fault. He didn't do anything wrong. I don't believe he defended the fucking thing even one time. Now he's going to defend it and he's going to lose. Ridge Holland from NXT has been called up to SmackDown. Xia Li, supposedly because they want some Chinese representation on the main roster, so Xia Li has gotten the call up. What a great way, by the way. It's so nice to hear stories like that, that Xia Li is being called up from NXT to the main roster. Why is Xia Li being called up? Because they want a Chinese star. Not because they think, oh, this woman, you know, she could be a big name, or she's got a lot of talent, she's got great potential. No, you know, we have our checkboxes of, you know, we need to check this box off and that box off, and she seems to fit the criteria, so let's call her up. I certainly hope they do more with her than just call her up and just have her on the main roster for the sake of being able to say that, hey, we have a Chinese-born wrestler on our roster, see? Doesn't sound like they have a lot of plans for her. But supposedly, that's the reason why she's being called up. And Aaliyah from NXT is going to SmackDown. And I'm not trying to pick on Aaliyah, but I use Aaliyah as an example here because Aaliyah has been in developmental for a number of years. But it's not as if she was lighting the world on fire down in NXT. The fact that they drafted Aaliyah to SmackDown and left LA Knight undrafted on NXT is one of the more mind-numbingly stupid things that this company has done this year. Now, among the names that went undrafted and are now considered free agents, we know Brock Lesnar's a free agent, Well, we've got Asuka and Bayley, both of whom have been out with injuries. We have Elias, who got some vignettes teasing a new direction for his character and then fell off the face of the earth. Maybe he got lost roaming around the cemetery. Eva Marie, Grand Metalik, who recently asked for his release, and no word on whether or not he's gotten it. Obviously, we would have heard if he was released, and so he's still with the company. And Lince Dorado also went undrafted here. No mention at all in this draft of Dakota Kai from NXT, which is very strange. She's gotten some dark matches recently. But then again, so did Bronson Reed. And apparently he didn't impress, and they got rid of him. Hopefully that is not a bad omen for Dakota Kai, who has not appeared on NXT since losing to Raquel Gonzalez. Certainly she would fit into either women's division on Raw or SmackDown, but there was no mention of her at all, being drafted, undrafted. It's like she doesn't even exist. And Harry Smith is another name. He was backstage at the show on Monday night. Maybe even Friday, but I think on Monday he was there, but he was not used. Nor was he drafted. He has been re-signed with WWE since April. And he was part of the very first match back in front of live fans. It was a dark match at SmackDown in Houston in July. There were reports at the time that one plan was for him to maybe go to NXT UK to feud with Walter, but John Laurinaitis pushed for him to go straight to the main roster, and then he had the one dark match, and he hasn't been seen since. Now, apparently he got COVID, but he's over it now, so it just seems like it's a matter of waiting and seeing where they want him to go. If you want maximum visibility, you don't send him to NXT UK. You send him to SmackDown. So, as I look at these rosters, on paper, Raw looks stronger than it was coming into this. Stronger even than SmackDown, I think. Raw was able to keep most of its top male stars and raided a lot of the top male talent from SmackDown. You know, they kept Big E and Lashley and Randy Orton and AJ Styles and Matt Riddle and Damian Priest, but they got Seth Rollins, they got Edge, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens. You know, you could even throw in Rey Mysterio if you want to. I know he's kind of been phased down, but he's still a big name. So Raw won that battle. And they won the battle of the tag teams. At first, I gave it to SmackDown, but as I look at it now, Raw has Orton and Riddle, Styles and Omos, who shouldn't even be a team for much longer, the Street Profits, the Alpha Academy, Rey and Dominic, the Hurt Business, you know, even Dolph and Big Bob, if you want to throw them in there too. Where I would give SmackDown the slight edge is with the women, picking up Charlotte and Shayna and keeping Sasha and Naomi and Toni Storm. Three of the tag teams in the women's division, which was not much of a division to begin with. There were maybe four teams total. Three of those teams are no more. They no longer exist. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, they had technically already broken up a few weeks ago, but up until recently, they were a team. They were a team forever. And that breakup was long overdue. Now they're no more. Natty and Tamina are on separate brands now, so they're broken up, as are Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart, who never even got the tag team title match that they were owed. How many wins and singles wins did they get over Natty and Tamina over a period of weeks on SmackDown? And they earned the right to challenge for the tag team titles, never even had a title match, and they are already broken up. The women's tag team scene has been decimated. They are better off using those belts for scrap metal at this point. And the fact is this, here's the reality check on this women's tag team stuff. Sasha Banks and Bayley were the ones who publicly lobbied the hardest for those belts to even become a thing. And after they won them, they lost them 7 weeks later to the Iconics. And when that happened, that was pretty much the end of them having any real value. The titles hanging on the wall behind me right now are more valuable than the women's tag team titles. You know, I used an analogy for one of the members-only Q&A videos I did on YouTube this week when somebody asked me about heels and, you know, baby faces as champions. Are heels better as champions than baby faces? And I talked about the money really being in the chase. And I used the dog chasing after the car analogy. And I think it somewhat applies here as well. Sasha and Bayley were chasing after those titles. And they were lobbying for them for months. And when they finally got them, the company had no idea what to do with them. It's like, all right, well, we heard you loud and clear. We made these belts, right? Look at us. We're so progressive. We have women's tag team titles and we've crowned our first women's tag team champions. And then they didn't know what the fuck to do. They hadn't even thought that far ahead. It's like they were only created specifically for Sasha and Bayley. And then a few weeks later, they dropped them and they were never taken seriously ever again. Those titles are completely useless. Completely, utterly, totally useless. Now, one of our listeners, Tony, emailed me about the idea of a trade deadline. We talk about the draft every year. He emailed me about the idea of a trade deadline, like you see in sports like baseball. His idea was, you know, from the night after the Royal Rumble to the week before WrestleMania is your trade period. And he suggested you get 5 trades that are allowed per show, including NXT and NXT UK in that. I don't think it's a bad idea. I would limit it to 3 trades, not 5. And I would let it run through the night after WrestleMania. Why limit yourself only to the week before? Otherwise, I like the idea. But again, these people have never shown much of an interest or an aptitude for booking a proper brand split or anything fun beyond the draft itself. They came up with that dumb wild card rule. That was a Vince McMahon thing that was, I mean, they bust it out every now and then when they remember that it exists, but we knew that was not going to be an idea that was going to last very long. Trades would be fun. You know, doing the Battle of the Brands at Survivor Series for something more than just bragging rights, like draft picks, if they didn't hold the draft so damn late in the year. Or the 30th spot in the men's and the women's Royal Rumble matches. But they don't care. That's the point. They don't care. It's why you hear me every year talking about this. I talk about this and you guys email me with these ideas because they have not been, they have not been enacted because they don't listen, because they don't care. They don't care. They're too lazy. It's just never been a priority to them. But I look at the Raw roster. And I ask myself, what are the 3 matches? What are the 3 matches or the 3 programs I would like to see the most as I now look at the makeup of this Monday Night Raw roster? And the first match that comes to mind is AJ Styles and Finn Balor. They find themselves on the same brand, former Bullet Club members, back on the same show. They need to do something with the two of those guys. I think of the match I proposed a few weeks ago. I said Kevin Owens is going to go to Raw. I would move him to Raw. And sure enough, he got moved. He gets moved every year. But let's get heel Kevin Owens back. Kevin Owens has been falling on his luck. He's down on his luck now on SmackDown. He's getting his ass kicked every week by Baron Corbin and Madcap Moss. Doesn't get any lower than that. Now Owens is going to go to Raw. It's not enough to just move him from this show to the other. There's got to be a real change. And whatever Kevin Owens' future plans are, and if they don't think he's going to re-sign, then they won't give him a push, I guess. But I think he goes heel. He could be an opponent and a challenger for the WWE Championship and Big E. Heel Owens against Big E is a program that I would work towards. And then Damian Priest and Seth Rollins find themselves on the same brand. I just think, you know, some of the matches that we've seen Priest having recently with Sheamus and others have been really good. We know Seth Rollins in the ring can deliver. I think a Rollins-Priest feud, you know, it doesn't have to be for the U.S. title, but I think Rollins against Priest would be a great match and a fun program. Over on the SmackDown roster, the first match I thought of that I would like to see, program match, you know, call it whatever you want, Sasha Banks and Toni Storm. Although I don't have a lot of faith after watching what they did with Toni Storm on TV this week. But Sasha Banks and Toni Storm is a match I absolutely would work towards on SmackDown. Sheamus and Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. I think it's only a matter of time before Sheamus finally claims his first IC title. And then Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre would be the other one. It really is shocking to me. As I look at the SmackDown roster, even with the names that moved, it is shocking how poor of a job WWE has done building up someone, anyone, who looks like the obvious choice to topple Roman Reigns or who could even just kind of be on his level. I look at the roster and I say, okay, Roman Reigns has been the Universal Champion now for over a year. And I've enjoyed most of this run that he has had. At some point in these next several months or by WrestleMania, you should get to a point where you got to get the belt onto somebody else. I look at these rosters and I look at the roster that he's on right now. It's just shocking. I can't look at that roster and say, there it is, right there. That guy there. That's the guy. That's the name that should take the championship from Roman Reigns. Even Drew McIntyre. He may end up being the guy. I don't look at Drew and say to myself, there's the guy. That's the guy that should beat the Tribal Chief and take the Universal title. No, Drew McIntyre is the closest thing that they now have on that brand, but he is not the guy. I don't look at him and think he's the guy. It all comes back to Brock Lesnar, who I don't think is winning the championship in Saudi Arabia, but they may run that match back at WrestleMania, and maybe then Brock takes the title. But how sad is that? If it comes down to Brock and Roman again at WrestleMania, that Brock Lesnar is the only one I can think of looking at these rosters who strikes me as somebody who should be the one to take the championship from Roman Reigns. Nobody else is ready. They haven't built up anybody else. And that's on the company. That's not Roman Reigns' fault. It's not like Roman Reigns is burying everybody he works with. Roman Reigns is working with all these people. He's programmed to work with all of these people. I don't blame him. It's not like he's actively politicking behind the scenes to bury people. WWE. They're the ones with their heads buried so far up their own ass, they have not built up anybody else who even remotely looks like they're on this guy's level. And now, as we get closer and closer now to WrestleMania, and we're going to be entering, you know, year two of this title reign, it's all on them. They've had all this time, and all they've done is have him mow down guy after guy and not taking the time in the meantime to build up one or two other people that you can look at and go, that's the person. I thought maybe eventually Big E would be that guy on the SmackDown brand, and instead they moved him over to Raw and they put the WWE Championship on him. So it's not Big E. You know, it's not as if we haven't seen other promotions, even other brands within the same company that have had that dominant champion that have been champion for even longer than Roman Reigns. Walter, my God, how many days was Walter? The NXT United Kingdom champion was over 800 days, I think. Ilya Dragunov felt like he was the guy. They had that great match in front of no fans last year, but they kept, you know, building him up and building him and building him. And I said, it feels like the right time. Dragunov feels like the right person at the right time to take that title from Walter. He was the guy. And in the end, I was right. He beat Walter and now he's the champion. Even MLW. Just had their Fightland show. Jacob Fatu, MLW heavyweight champion, well over 800 days. Who was the guy to beat him? It was Alex Hammerstone, because they built him up over a long period of time, and a lot of people looked at Hammerstone and said, this guy right here, he's going to be the guy to end the reign of Jacob Fatu and take the championship away from him. There was an obvious choice. Right now, there is no obvious choice, maybe outside of Lesnar, that exists on SmackDown in WWE to take that title from Roman Reigns. And that's a problem. AEW celebrated 2 years of Dynamite on TNT Wednesday night with a fun show, highlighted by the return of the Hangman, Adam Page, as the Joker entrant in the casino ladder match. And the reaction he got from the crowd in Philadelphia should put to rest any concerns people may have had about him coming back and being overshadowed by all the new guys, being overshadowed by CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole. He blew the roof off the joint. And he pulled down the giant poker chip to earn the right to challenge for the AEW World title at a future date. It's very encouraging to not only see the fans react to Paige the way they that they did on Wednesday and react to Luchasaurus the way they did in the opening match. Even with Danielson and Adam Cole in that same match, Luchasaurus was probably over as much as they were, if not more. So it was encouraging not only to see all of that, but to see AEW doing a good job of taking all that new talent and having them work with their own guys, the younger guys. You know, I've talked about putting Sting with Darby and how smart that was, and Punk working with him at All Out, Punk working matches against Powerhouse Hobbs. That was the best match Hobbs has had in his AEW career to date. Punk working with Daniel Garcia Friday on Rampage. You know, Garcia wrestled a Rampage main event against Darby a few weeks ago. This was not his first big match on Rampage. Adam Cole working against Jungle Boy, Malakai Black. He's going to be wrestling Dante Martin on Dynamite next weekend. MJF working that program with Brian Pillman Jr. a few weeks ago. You know, which looking back on it, kind of went over like a fart, but they were trying. They were trying to get Pillman over, you know, as a single and put the spotlight on him. I like the mix of old and new. And not even old. That's not even really the right way to say it. Not even old, but more established and less established. And I think they're doing a good job with that. Now, as far as Hangman, I would do the match at Full Gear. I don't think it is ideal to take the title off of Kenny Omega before he has a chance to defend against Punk or Danielson. But they only have 4 pay-per-views each year. So that's something I think that sometimes people forget when they're doing the WWE comparisons, you know, to AEW and vice versa. And the way that AEW does some of these things and builds up some of these challengers, you could say, well, my God, you know, they're going to do Hangman and Omega in November, and they haven't even done Omega and Punk for the title. They haven't even done Omega and Bryan for the title. But they have 4 pay-per-views. They don't have 12. So they have to figure out what the big title matches are going to be in the main events, you know, on these pay-per-views. And then if they do another big title match, let's say on TV, last year it was Winter is Coming. They built up this big TV special. It makes sense for them to do that because they don't have as many pay-per-views as WWE. And if they did, I would say that it's very stupid if they were going to do, let's say, Kenny Omega against CM Punk on TV for the championship. And I understand everything these days is about TV. It's about TV contracts and TV contract money. It is different in that respect now than it would have been 25 years ago during the Monday Night War and all that. I get that. But if they had a pay-per-view every month, I would sit here and say, boy, it's really stupid that they're, you know, giving that match away or giving some of these matches away. But they only have 4. So that's the, you know, kind of the restrictions they have to work with here. They don't have a big event every month where they can just rattle off one after the other and, you know, charge people $50 for it. So I think the time is now. I don't think you wait any longer. The time is now. People are ready for it. They're ready for Adam Page to get his moment, and I think that moment should come at Full Gear. Now, Pac took a scary bump in that match on a deadeye from Adam Page off a ladder down through a table. And Mark Henry was not a fan of that spot, and he said some things on Busted Open Radio on Thursday morning. He was expressing concern about Pac taking such a bump so soon after recovering, he said, from a concussion. Now, that's a perfectly valid concern to have, and if Pac recently had a concussion, then he's right. It was an incredibly stupid bump to take. But the issue is that neither Pac nor AEW publicly disclosed any concussion that Pac may have had. And Pac is a very private person. And Mark Henry just spouted off at the mouth that he suffered one about a month and a half ago, which, as SEScoops.com noted, would coincide with the period from August 20th to September 8th that he missed. That included the All Out pay-per-view where his match with Andrade was bumped for what they deemed travel reasons, which sounds like a BS excuse to cover for an injury. Now, in the segment on Busted Open, Henry even said, he goes, I'm probably breaking HIPAA laws, but... And then he just proceeded to say it anyway. So it's not even a matter of like, oh, it was a slip of the tongue. So not the best way to endear yourself, I would think, to your employer by sharing private medical information like that about another wrestler, assuming he did it without Pac's consent. But look, he's not wrong in how dumb it was if the man just came back a few weeks ago from a concussion. And the thing about Mark Henry is, you know, he has talked before openly about this type of stuff. He takes concussions and head injuries very seriously. You know, 2 years ago, he pledged to donate his own brain to CTE research. So I think his heart was in the right place, but it is not his place to reveal something like that unless someone told him that they were okay with it. And if not, then that was not a good thing for him to be doing. On TV this week, they unveiled the new TBS Championship. That's going to be their secondary singles title for the ladies, as the TNT title is for the men. They clearly did not get Reggie Parks to make these belts, although I do think it is nicer than their main women's title. It's bigger, too. I think it's the blue ribbon. I think that's what it is. On this new belt, they have like that blue ribbon on the center medallion. You know, the TNT title has the red ribbon. I love belts that have blue in them. It's probably one of the reasons I love the Winged Eagles so much. But the first champion is going to be decided in a tournament that's taking place over these next 2 months. The finals will be held on January 5th when Dynamite debuts on TBS. So who's going to be the first TBS champion? Well, if it's a babyface that they want to go with, because we have a heel holding the main women's title, I propose Ruby Soho. Ruby Soho, I think, would be a fine choice, and I think her being the champion and working with all these different AEW ladies would be great, I think, if you want to establish that title. And Serena Deeb would be my choice on the heel side if they want to go with a heel. We saw Serena Deeb go heel on TV this past week and attacking Hikaru Shida, preventing Shida from getting her 50th win in AEW. Serena is great. She's had knee problems that have plagued her for much of this year, but she's back and she's healthy, hopefully. And if they are looking for a heel, you know, Jade Cargill, you want to go with a monster, you know, champion who just rips through the entire division. You could go with Jade. Jade is not really ready for that, I don't think, yet. If it's me, I go with Serena if they're looking for a heel. Bobby Fish is All Elite. He had a good showing on Dynamite. He lost to Sammy Guevara in their TNT title match. He was already signed to a deal, as we now know, but they wanted it to come across like Sammy was accepting challenges from all comers, including people who aren't even signed to the company. He was already signed when they did all of that. The Young Bucks recommended him and helped put the deal together. I tell you what I would love to see. I would love to see Fish and O'Reilly back together, and you get a Red Dragon reunion going in that tag team division there. Fish was already using the old Red Dragon theme song when he came out on Wednesday. But imagine Red Dragon against the Bucks, Red Dragon against FTR, Red Dragon against the Lucha Bros. A lot of great potential matchups for them there. I mean, Bobby Fish is a very good wrestler, but I look at Bobby Fish and I don't see singles matches with Bobby Fish getting me excited. What gets me excited is the thought of adding Red Dragon to that tag team division. But Kyle O'Reilly is in NXT and probably is staying there, and so that doesn't look like it's going to happen. On Rampage on Friday night, CM Punk had maybe his best match since returning to the ring with a win over Daniel Garcia, who was giving me serious Zack Sabre Jr. vibes in that match. This kid is really good. And while he was on TV in Philadelphia wrestling CM Punk that very same night in California, because Chelsea Green was not the only one pulling double duty this week, one live and one on, one on one show and one on the other like she did last night. While he was on TV against Punk in Philly, Daniel Garcia was out in California wrestling Minoru Suzuki for West Coast Pro Wrestling. So in the span of a week, actually, I think less than a week, Daniel Garcia wrestled CM Punk, Minoru Suzuki, Alex Shelley, and Davey Richards. So he had himself quite the week. The Lucha Bros retained their AEW tag team titles over the Acclaimed on Friday night. And Ricky Starks is still the FTW champion after a win over Brian Cage in their Philadelphia street fight. Rampage this Friday is live in Miami with Punk back in the ring again. against Matt Sydal. Punk has been exclusive to Rampage as far as TV matches go so far. It's like there's an invisible brand split. CM Punk was drafted to Rampage. That's what it feels like. Also, the Bunny goes one-on-one with Ruby Soho, and Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, and Sammy Guevara representing the Inner Circle take on Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky, and Junior Dos Santos, having what I believe would be his first official pro wrestling match. If they keep it to Dos Santos and Jake Hager, I think it could look good. If we get Dos Santos and Chris Jericho in a strike exchange, then it's not going to look so good. Now, Dynamite is airing on Saturday, each of these next 2 weeks, due to the NHL. So there will be no live stream on YouTube Wednesday night. I'll be live instead on Friday and Saturday night this week. Dynamite has Dante Martin against Malakai Black. Lucha Bros defending their AAA tag team titles against a mystery masked team being brought in by Andrade, friends of Andrade. And it was strongly hinted at on the AAA show last night that Dragon Lee and Dralístico will be the mystery team, although they didn't come right out and say it. They did challenge the Lucha Bros. It looks like it will probably end up being them. Bryan Danielson takes on Bobby Fish, and the brackets will be revealed for their world title eliminator with the finals taking place at Full Gear. So just like last year, it's the finals happening at Full Gear, not the title match, because I presume that Hangman will be getting his match with Kenny on that show. Now, SmackDown will be airing on FS1 this Friday, and then again in 2 weeks, they'll be back on FS1 again, because Fox is airing Game 1 on Friday of the ALCS. But they are adding an extra half an hour to the show. They're calling it Super SmackDown, supersized episode of SmackDown. So it'll be running on FS1 from 8 to 10:30 p.m. Now maybe it's just a short overrun with an episode of Talking Smack taking up most of the extra time. The fact that they're promoting it as a supersized episode of SmackDown would imply otherwise. This part of the segment now that I'm getting into is what I'm referring to as Tony time. Now we're going to get to Tony time here. Because Tony Khan tweeted after Rampage ended on Friday, and I guess he found out about this supersized edition of SmackDown. Tony Khan tweeted, and clearly he was referring to WWE. He said, "I saw that you're doing a half hour head-to-head with us. I can't wait to finally beat your main show head-to-head. It's been a long time coming. See you next Friday for Rampage on TNT." Whether it's Talking Smack or not, you know, that they're going to fill that extra half an hour with, this is absolutely WWE trying to fuck with Rampage. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But that can't possibly be true. I mean, I was told that AEW was in competition to WWE. How could this be? I feel lied to. I feel misled, bamboozled, hoodwinked. I'll tell you what worries me about this. This is how it starts. Let's add an extra 30 minutes to SmackDown. And then if that does well, 2.5 hours eventually becomes 3 hours. With 2 hours on Fox, because they can't put the full three, because they got all the local newscasts at 10 p.m. So you get 2 hours of SmackDown from 8 to 10, and then you'll have an extra hour. Everybody go switch over to FS1. That's what worries me. The last thing the world needs is 3 hours of SmackDown. It doesn't need 3 hours of Raw, let alone 3 hours of SmackDown. But Toru Yano fan account tweeted, "I'm a very, very optimistic AEW fan, but I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty concerned about Tony Khan's comments aging poorly next week, considering they'll be facing Sasha against Becky during that overrun." Now, he didn't tag Tony Khan in that tweet. And the only reason I even know about Toru Yano fan account's tweet is because Tony Khan found it. He must have been vanity searching, I guess. But he found it and he responded to this person the next day. And he said, "If I'm not sweating it, you shouldn't be either. This is what sports are about. Set a goal and try your best. We've got a great Rampage card on Friday and a big Dynamite on Saturday. I expect to do well, but regardless of next Friday's stats, it'll be a great weekend for the fans." Which is true. He's right about that. But that's a little more tame than his first tweet. I think he sobered up and realized that Rampage is not beating SmackDown this week. And he decided to tone things down a little bit. Does this man not sleep? That's my question. Doesn't he have enough on his plate without responding to Toru Yano fan accounts? He also replied to another tweet that brought up Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to a fight at Slamboree all those many years ago. And why are people making such a big deal about Tony Khan tweeting, right, and all this other stuff? And Tony responded, and he said, dude, people online were absolutely furious over that in 98. Eric had already crazy online heat before that. I'll never take it that far. I've never claimed that I could physically best Vince. I just think AEW can put on a better wrestling show than them, and I want people to know it. I do think Vince McMahon, even at 76 years old, would whoop Tony Khan in a fight. I do. But see, I like what he did there. There's nothing wrong with thinking that you can put on a better wrestling show than them and being proud of that and wanting people to know that. On many weeks, they do have the better wrestling show. But saying you can't wait to beat SmackDown head-to-head, I mean, I know it's on FS1 this week, but I don't see that happening. The only other thing with AEW I want to mention, Roads to the Top. I said I was going to see if I would stick with it, and I did watch the next two episodes, because they're half an hour each. And really, you know, again, it's very much like what I described last week. I mean, it's obviously it's the Cody and Brandy show, and a lot of it has to do about Brandy being pregnant, and Cody feeling as if he's being, you know, pulled in all these different directions and he's being stretched too thin. He's, you know, burning the candle at both ends. And what am I going to do? I don't have time for everything I want to have time for. The focus this week, though, was on the weigh-in segment before Double or Nothing in May. That horrible weigh-in segment on TV with Cody and Anthony Ogogo, where Paul White was sort of the master of ceremonies trying to measure them on a non-digital scale. I don't know why they didn't buy a digital scale, but he couldn't read the fucking thing. And it just went on forever. And they admit on the show that that segment was a complete and total disaster. And you can even see Tony Khan in the back on headset telling somebody in their ear, tell them to wrap it the fuck up. This has gone on long enough. And if you remember, during that segment, all of a sudden, as if things weren't going bad enough, in the middle of this segment, fireworks go off. Because in the stadium right next door, what was it called? The team called the Blue Shrimp or something? I think it's some kind of weird minor league baseball name. They had won their game, I guess, or the game was over, and all of a sudden there's this big pyro display, and it's completely interrupting the show. So everything about that segment was a fail. And that was really the focus. It was the horrible weigh-in. And the build-up to Cody's match with Ogogo, where he beat Ogogo at Double or Nothing. That was it. That really was the entire focus. And Brandy is still pregnant. And she is still very worried about, you know, missing out, right? The FOMO, as they say, right? Fear of missing out. And, you know, you're entitled to 4 months of leave as a new mom. And she's like, no, I can't imagine taking it. I got to come back and I got to get back in the ring. My career isn't over. You know, and I just laugh. I know she's wrestled. It's not like she hasn't had any matches. But I don't get the sense anybody is clamoring for Brandi Rhodes to get back into the ring. It's not as if she was a big, you know, in-ring star. She was a personality on the show. She would wrestle occasionally. She would manage Cody and she would interfere in some of his matches and stuff. But is anybody clamoring for the big Brandi Rhodes in-ring return? I mean, now that they have this TBS championship, I certainly hope the idea is not to build some kind of story around Brandi Rhodes and her big comeback to the ring and they put the championship on her. Because I think that would be a huge mistake. Anyway, that was Rhodes to the Top. Other news and notes. WOW Women of Wrestling is back. It is being relaunched next September by LA Lakers owner Jeannie Buss and David McLean, who is the creator of the original GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and WOW as well in its previous incarnations. WOW Women of Wrestling has been around before. This is just the latest relaunch. They made the announcement at a press conference on Wednesday. They were also joined by Tessa Blanchard, who is not only the main star, but one of the casting directors for the show. And in a surprise, they were also joined by AJ Mendez, the former AJ Lee, Mrs. Phil Brooks, back in wrestling for the first time since 2015 when she left WWE. I don't think this is what people expected when CM Punk came back to work for AEW, that AJ would also come back, but not in the ring, and not for any of the major promotions. She will serve as the executive producer and color commentator for the show, which will air in syndication on CBS stations throughout the country. It's a syndication deal, which, you know, won't mean much if they don't get clearances in most states. You know, you can have a syndicated show that airs in 30 out of the 50 states. I mean, if you're not in places like New York and, you know, Illinois and, you know, major markets like New York and Chicago and Boston and places like that, then it's not going to mean much. But also the time slot. You know, you can get clearance on a syndicated station somewhere, but you could air at 12 o'clock midnight or 3 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, it could be a time slot like that. So we don't know exactly when and where the show is going to air, but the show is going to be called Wow Superheroes, built around Tessa and their champion, The Beast. Wow, you know, it used to air on Access TV a few years ago until Anthem bought Access, and that pretty much spelled the end of not only Wow on Access TV, but New Japan as well, since Anthem owns Impact. Past seasons of Wow are expected to air on its own Pluto TV channel starting in December. I will vouch for Pluto. Pluto is awesome. I watch it every day. They have entire channels devoted to specific shows, among other channels, movie channels, comedy channels, all kinds of, you know, different genres and stuff, game show channels. But I mean, they have entire channels devoted to The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross, which is a favorite of mine. Early 80s episodes of The Price is Right with Bob Barker. I'm more used to watching it now with Bob Barker with dark hair than I am gray hair. And I grew up on gray hair Bob Barker. And Rod Roddy. But now I've been watching so much early Price is Right from the early 80s that I look at Bob Barker with the gray hair now, and it's weird to me. I've been watching Bob Barker and Johnny Olsen in these early episodes. They just added an entire channel devoted to episodes of Matlock. I swear to God, I am an 80-year-old man trapped in a body over 40 years younger. But I love it. I love it. And they have a channel devoted to old pro wrestling as well. And I will watch that every now and then. And they actually air a lot of those old Glow shows. So you see the original Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling will be on there sometimes. Other times it's classic, you know, I don't even know what to call it, if it's like compilation shows or whatever, but like old Memphis matches with Jerry Lawler. And I flipped it on one day and it was like Jerry Lawler was on there in the ring against Nick Bockwinkel, I think. And there was a young Cactus Jack, and then they'll have, you know, independent shows, you know, Beyond Wrestling and stuff like that. Shows with some of the stars that you see on TV today. You know, I was watching something the other day and there's Tony Nese and Drew Gulak and, you know, people that you'll see on WWE television today. So anyway, the point is they have a whole bunch of different channels, and it looks like Wow is going to get one of their own. But on the Wow YouTube channel, Izzy, the super fan. Remember Izzy, Bayley's biggest fan, the one who Sasha Banks made cry on that one takeover show? Oh, that was so great. I've met Izzy and her parents, actually, when I was going to a lot of those shows and even some of the WrestleManias and stuff, and they seem like very lovely people. But Izzy did an interview with AJ Mendez on their YouTube channel, and she said, "I say the same thing in every interview, and it's always never say never, but don't hold your breath. What I mean by that is I never say never to anything, physically, mentally, emotionally. I'm healed from everything I've gone through in wrestling. I could technically do it." She's referring to an in-ring role, getting back in the ring and wrestling. "I could technically do it, but I'm so enjoying letting the next generation have their spotlight. I got to do everything I wanted to do, so it really would have to be, is that challenge there? I don't think the girls need me there. I think they're going to take over the world all by themselves." That kind of flies in the face of what her husband said when he was asked about it a while back by the New York Post, and he said that she can't. Like, physically, she just... it's completely out of the question at all, an in-ring return. She seems to be leaving the door open for an in-ring return, but she seems very happy being out of the ring and doing other things and being behind the scenes. It is smart for them to bring aboard someone like AJ to be the face of this thing, but she might not want to be the face of WOW if they keep doing stuff like this. They have produced a new t-shirt for Tessa Blanchard, who has not done anything of note since being stripped of her Impact World title last year and denying all the allegations of bullying and racism that were levied at her by not one person, not two people, multiple female wrestlers. Levied a lot of very serious accusations at Tessa. She already had a reputation, supposedly, for not being, you know, the most well-liked person necessarily in the locker room and making a lot of enemies and not always treating people the right way. Those stories, which is all they were, right? Those stories were out there long before these more serious accusations came out last year. So she hasn't done anything of note since then. And so it is no coincidence that she has been a free agent ever since, because her name is toxic. WWE and AEW want nothing to do with her. Either company could have had her at any time. And Tessa Blanchard in the ring as a performer is very good. Adding Tessa to the women's division in AEW would have been a huge boost. Adding Tessa to Raw or to SmackDown, she could have been mixing it up with the best that they have. And she could have gone on to become a really big star. The fact that neither one of those companies signed her tells you everything you need to know about what they think of her right now. The fact that her father works for AEW, she's got an in. She's got an in right there. And the fact that she's not there tells you all that you need to know. Now, she has denied all of the allegations against her. She never apologized for any of it. She doubled down. She said, I didn't do any of this. These are all lies. That's not the person I am. And look, if she insists that it's all lies, then I guess she would have nothing in her mind to apologize for. Right? In her mind, why am I going to apologize for something that I didn't do? But it's a bad look when you have multiple people coming forward to say that this happened, or they know someone that it happened to, or they believe the person making the accusations. Tessa has made a lot of enemies. It's not all because of jealousy. You know, there was a time when I said Tessa Blanchard is going to be headlining WrestleMania one day in these next few years against Charlotte Flair. I saw that as a potential WrestleMania main event. The two daughters of the Horsemen, right? Just that's how you market it. It sells itself. Tessa is very talented, but she made a choice, and that choice was to double down and insist that that's not who she is. She never used that kind of language, and that's that. Well, that's certainly one path to go down, but it was a bad career choice. Now, if WOW wants to give her a platform to rehab her career and her image, they're free to do that. Just like fans are free to decide if they want to support a product and support a company that employs her and features her as its poster child, because it looks like she's going to be their main star. She's going to be the face of WOW Women of Wrestling. The market will dictate whether or not that is a sound business strategy. What is not a sound business strategy, and is incredibly fucking tone-deaf and stupid, is playing off of that with a t-shirt. There were reports, you know, a few months ago that WWE and AEW and even some independent promoters, they were steering clear of her because, in their words, she was nuclear. That was the word in that report that was used at that time. The woman is nuclear. So we're going to stay away from her. We're going to steer clear of her. We can't go near her. And so what WOW went and did was make a t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees with a mushroom cloud on it that says nuclear. And Tessa Blanchard's name is underneath. The woman is nuclear because she is accused of racism and bullying. Whether you believe her or not is irrelevant. She is accused of some terrible shit. This company thinks it's a great idea to play off of that and draw even more attention to it, which does not speak very well to the people who run this company. So this went over about as well as you would expect on social media. And we're still a year away from them even running their first show. I'm not convinced there's even going to be a first show at this rate. This thing sounds like a train wreck waiting to happen. And I'm here for it. It'll give me great content for the podcast. I can't wait for them to bring in Hulk Hogan as her new manager. I watched the MLW Fightland show that aired on Vice TV Thursday night after Dark Side of the Ring. Jacob Fatu, 825 days as MLW World Champion in a title unification against Alex Hammerstone, the MLW National Openweight Champion, now for more than 860 days. They promoted the hell out of this match. They billed it as the biggest match in MLW history. I enjoyed the match. I didn't love it as much as other people did. Hammerstone was hurt early, and Fatu apparently asked him several times if he wanted to go home early, and Hammerstone refused. He badly sprained his ankle, so he was limited in what he could do, including at the finish. You know, I thought the finish fell flat, and you could tell the crowd felt the same way. A very weird reaction at the finish there. You know, considering how long Fatu held that title for it to end the way that it did, with a flat finish, and it ended on that TKO, people weren't expecting that to be the end, and neither was I. And I think it hurt the match, but Hammerstone did the best he could given the injury that he had. That's why he didn't use his nightmare pendulum finish, because he felt that he couldn't. He did what he could on that leg, but obviously felt that he couldn't do that move. Fatu is awesome to watch. For a guy his size to be doing the things that he does, you know, he did a moonsault at one point, barefoot, off the guardrail, landed on his feet. He did a coast-to-coast in the ring with a chair to Hammerstone from one corner to the other. He's great, and they've got him locked in for a while yet, so he's not going anywhere. He's somebody, you know, he's been a heel, and who knows now, maybe he's a babyface. You know, he could be somebody they continue to build around. He is going to be somebody they continue to build around. Hammerstone now is the champion, but, you know, maybe like a babyface Jacob Fatu or something as their number two, as they try to expand, is I think, something that's a great thing for MLW. Now, they also announced that they will be bringing in Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay will be making his debut this fall. Their next event is November 6th in Philadelphia, so that could be where he debuts. And then 6 days after that, he's wrestling Amazing Red at the House of Glory show. And I had a chance to watch Escape the Undertaker on Netflix, starring The Undertaker and The New Day. This is quite possibly the most random movie ever made. I don't know why this exists, but it's only half an hour long, so I figured, why not? Why not? I was curious mostly about the interactive aspect of this. The basic plot is that Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, and Big E go to The Undertaker's haunted mansion to try to steal the urn. If this movie was called Escape the Enforcer, starring Arn Anderson, with New Day attempting to break into his home, it would have been a very short film. But, well, yeah, they want to break into the house, basically, not even break in, but they want to get into the mansion, and they want to take the urn so they can combine the supernatural powers of the urn with their own power of positivity. And Undertaker has this entire control center inside, with cameras everywhere, like he's fucking Bruce Wayne in the Batcave. I like to think that he built this fortress for himself to stop Vince McMahon from finding him every time Vince wanted him to come back for another match. You know, Vince would have to go through this maze, and if he succeeded, then The Undertaker would have to do another match. But the draw of the movie is the ability for us as the viewer to make choices about what we want the characters to do. It's not really a choose-your-own-adventure. That's kind of what I thought it would be. But that's not really accurate. It's not really a choose-your-own-adventure type deal, because the choices you make, they don't really change anything. They don't change the story at all. It all just leads back to the exact same place. But it's kind of similar to the Black Mirror movie, Bandersnatch, if you ever saw Bandersnatch. I actually got frustrated with Bandersnatch when it came out and was obviously not making the right choices. And it kept sending me back to the beginning of the film, so I just gave up. I never went back to it. I never finished Bandersnatch. I got like 10 or 15 minutes into it. And I was so fucking frustrated with this movie. I never went back and finished. And I love Black Mirror. I love Black Mirror. I'm still waiting on another season of Black Mirror. That Shut Up and Dance episode has one of the most disturbing twist endings that I have ever seen. If you ask me what my favorite episode is, I don't know if favorite is the right word for it, but that's the one that really stands out to me. But anyway, it gives you the illusion that your decisions matter, but they really don't. The whole thing if I had to sum up the movie in one way, one sentence, it's mindless fun. New Day is exactly the same as they are on TV, so if you like them there, you'll like them here. I thought they did a good job. Undertaker doesn't do much. There is a fight scene at the end, so technically we got a cinematic match between the New Day and the Undertaker. But the funniest part of this is right at the beginning, before the movie even gets going, Undertaker is talking about how the Urn has this endless need to consume people's souls. And he asks, "Are you brave enough to wield my Urn?" And they give you the option on screen of saying, "I'm ready." You can choose that as a choice. Or, "I'm too scared." So I decided to hit the "I'm too scared" option first, just to see what happens. And what happens is the movie just ends. That's it. The movie just ends. And it immediately cuts to the closing credits, which very quickly scroll down the screen. And it credits The Undertaker with every position in the film. He clearly worked very hard on this film because he is listed as the director. He is listed as the writer, the producer, the executive producer, the costume designer, the stunt coordinator, the fight coordinator, the music composer. He does it all. But once you get into it, because I went back, once you get into it, New Day decides it would be best to split up, which is almost never a good idea in these movies, but they all do it. And you get to choose whether you want to follow Kofi, do you want to follow Xavier into this room, you want to follow Biggie into this room. But in the end, they're reunited in the next scene, they're just reunited. Before being broken up again. So basically a cinematic version of the WWE draft. New Day, I think, is the best part of this. Like I said, they're pretty good. It's just too bad they fired The Fiend. Because something like this would have been perfect for him. Seriously, something like this, a partnership with Netflix, the ability to put together some kind of a movie or a horror movie. I've said that before. I think Bray Wyatt as The Fiend character, or even going in and out of being Bray Wyatt in The Fiend, and the way he talks and his imagination, all the wild ideas he probably has, that would have been perfect for a horror movie. I don't mean like a comedy type of like horror deal. I'm talking real horror. Like when they did the See No Evil movies with Kane, they really should have found something like that for Bray to do as The Fiend. That, I think, would have been a much better use of that character than whatever the fuck they did with him on TV before they screwed it all up. Speaking of screwing things up, last night, after I wrapped up my work for today's show, I came out of the shower and I realized I forgot to draw the blinds closed in my bedroom. I probably gave Mr. Magoo across the street a nice little free show. I'm sure he was very impressed, but I wasn't. It was embarrassing. That's what it's like to use the internet without ExpressVPN. It's like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give random creeps a chance to invade your privacy? You need a VPN, because internet service providers can see every single website you visit. You only think that you have privacy when you're browsing online, but unless you're using a VPN like ExpressVPN, you really don't. Then they can turn around and sell this information without your consent to ad companies that use all of that data to target you. It's pretty creepy stuff. With ExpressVPN, you can browse more anonymously. These ISPs can't see your online activity, and your data is encrypted so that nobody is able to get through. It's also easy to use, and it works across all of your devices, phones, laptops, routers. So everyone who shares your Wi-Fi is protected. You got kids? Maybe upstairs in their room, surfing the web? They get the same protection that you do if you're all on the same network. From my experience, it's nice to have that peace of mind when I'm online. I mean, our entire lives are online. I'm no exception to that. I want to be sure that I'm being smart and I'm being safe. You can't put a price on that. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster today. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Use that link and get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. The King of the Ring and Queen's Crown tournaments kicked off on SmackDown Friday night. And on the women's side, they've already screwed it all up. On the men's side, Sami Zayn beat Rey Mysterio to advance to the next round, and Finn Balor pinned Cesaro, so Balor will meet Zayn in the semifinals. Both of them were good matches. I thought Balor and Cesaro, not surprisingly, had the match of the night. Dominic inadvertently cost his father the match, so the tease of a breakup between father and son continues, and now both of them have been drafted to Monday Night Raw. Dominic this week did an interview and said that the goal long-term is for him to take over the mask and the Rey Mysterio name and for him to eventually be called Rey Mysterio Jr. as his father was when he was wrestling for WCW. Vince McMahon hates juniors. So when he came over to WWE in 2002, he went from Rey Mysterio Jr. to just Rey Mysterio. But now Dominic is talking about one day becoming the new Rey Mysterio Jr. But he says he has to earn it first. He hasn't earned it yet. You know, there's a story there that they can definitely tell. But great storytelling is not always their specialty. So who knows if it'll be told or not. Balor and Cesaro, like I said, if you're looking for what I thought was the best part of SmackDown on Friday, they had a good match. Nothing outstanding or anything like that. I don't think it's much of a mystery who's going over in the second round, considering the finals are being held in Saudi Arabia. And Sammy has said before that he has basically been banned from those shows due to, I don't even know if he's 100% sure. You know, I've heard him talk about this and it's not a, what I can gather is that he has not gone to WWE and said, I will not go over there. He has not been invited over there. I guess due to his Syrian heritage, it could cause problems. And I can understand him going into the country and wanting to make sure he's safe and he can get out of the country. So he's not flying over there, is the point. So he's not going to the finals. Now, the other side of the bracket has Kofi Kingston against Jinder Mahal. And yes, Xavier Woods is in the King of the Ring. And he faces Ricochet this week in the first round. There will be no King Ricochet. He can call himself King Ricochet, but there will be no King Ricochet. I say Woods is going to go all the way to the semis, but loses to Jinder Mahal. And we end up with a Finn Balor, Jinder Mahal final with Balor becoming the king. That is my prediction. Woods against Kofi Kingston would be the more compelling match. It's the match that I would do because of their friendship. Kofi knowing how much the crown would mean to his boy Woods, who has not shut up for years about wanting to be in the King of the Ring and wanting to be King of the Ring. But also being a competitor. Right? And wanting to win it himself. That's the story I'm visualizing here. If they did a match between Kofi and Woods in the semifinals, that's kind of the setup right there. And let's say, you know, if being king actually meant anything, they would announce that whoever wins the crown would then be in line for a shot at their respective brand's championship. If they did that, all the more reason for Kofi to say, look, you and I are going to scrap, but I'm not laying down for you. I want that crown, and then I want that universal title. And they go out there, and they have just a banger of a match with Xavier Woods winning and going over on Kofi Kingston and going to the finals. And then you get Finn Balor and Xavier Woods in the finals, and I would still have Balor win. I would not have Woods win the King of the Ring. I would have Balor go over in the finals because Balor is the right choice. But what I fear is that we're not even going to get Woods and Kofi. We're going to end up getting Jinder all the way to the finals. Now, on the women's side, I don't know what they were thinking when they put this together. But there is only one name who should win this thing, and that is Shayna Baszler. The Queen of Spades should be the queen when this tournament is over. She wrestles Dana Brooke this week on TV. And the winner of that match will meet the winner of the Doudrop against Natalya match. They already teased the match between Baszler and Doudrop on Monday. So I think the two of them advance to the semifinals with Baszler winning and going on to the finals. On the other side of the bracket, we got two matches on Friday, neither of which lasted longer than 2 minutes. Toni Storm lost to Zelina Vega. Well, congrats to Zelina. She actually won one. She hasn't won shit since coming back to this company. And they decided that this would be a great time to put Zelina Vega over. And we'll have her beat Toni Storm. Bounced out of the first round in a short nothing match. While Liv Morgan, who the fans really seem to like, and they recently have really seen the beginning behind Liv Morgan, Liv Morgan lost to Carmella. So instead of setting up the obvious rematch between Liv Morgan and Zelina Vega in the semis after Vega pinned Liv on TV before Extreme Rules, and I remember thinking to myself, why would you have Zelina Vega in one of her only wins beat Liv Morgan on TV 48 hours before her pay-per-view match, which ended up being on the kickoff, against Carmella, unless they're going to bring it back on TV the next week and then Liv's going to get her win back or something. Then I saw the brackets and I said, okay, I'm still no fan of beating Toni Storm in a fucking 90-second opening round match, but at least if Vega won, Liv is going to beat Carmella, and then it makes sense, because now you've set up a rematch, heel against babyface. Liv is trying to get her win back over Zelina, who beat her a few weeks ago. That actually makes sense. That's what I imagine that they were setting up by having Toni Storm lose in that opening round. Instead, they have set up a heel versus heel match in the semifinals that nobody cares about. And they have eliminated two babyfaces that they had the potential to elevate by having them survive late into the tournament. These people have no idea what they're doing. They have no idea what they're doing. They are truly clueless. I don't agree with having Toni Storm lose in the first round, but at least it would have been sensible to have Liv move on, avenge her loss, and then try valiantly in the finals, right? Get people's hopes up. And have her go all the way to the finals, because she is so well-liked, but then fall short to Shayna Baszler, because I would still have Baszler, the heel, go over in the tournament. That's how I would have done it. But here's the problem here, besides the booking, which sucks. The problem here is, as I said, these matches were nothing. Nothing. 90 seconds. 2 minutes. Who could possibly care about any of this? This felt like an old Divas era show with how little time they gave to these women. I'm not surprised that we're seeing reports now online about massive frustration behind the scenes from both people who work for the company behind the scenes and the talent themselves with the way that the women have been used on TV in recent weeks. And Friday was another shining example of that. You're going to have your first ever Queen of the Ring, whatever fucking name they're giving it. It's the Queen of the Ring. Finally, your first ever Queen of the Ring, right? You're going to have one for the men, now you're going to have one for the women. And instead of making it really feel special and really feeling like you're putting some thought and some effort into it, you get what you got on Friday night. It's like the 2008 King of the Ring all over again. I remember watching that live when they brought the King of the Ring back in 08 on TV. I was on the road for work. I don't even remember where I remember where I was. I was in Florida. I was in Boca. And I'm in my hotel room and I'm watching the King of the Ring on this television. And I'm excited because I'm a fan of King of the Ring. And what we get? We got a bunch of short nothing matches with fucking Hornswoggle and all this bullshit. So they could get the crown on Regal, which was the end goal. I assume the end goal here is just get the crown on Shayna. But wouldn't it be nice if they put a little bit of effort into this and made the tournament really feel special? We understand it's not a pay-per-view anymore. It's not like what it used to be, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. They use it now as a gimmick for television because everything now is centered around TV, so I get that. But at least make the tournament feel special. It feels like they just did the women's tournament because they felt like they had to. Well, we're going to bring back the tournament for the men, and so people are going to complain it's not going to be well-received if we don't have one for the women. We have a Royal Rumble for the women, and we have an Elimination Chamber for the women. So I guess we got to give the women a tournament, too. Here you go. Here's your tournament. You happy now? Suck on that. Without putting any actual effort into it. And I didn't think it could get any worse than that 2008 King of the Ring. Boy, was I wrong. Tournament just started, and already it is a fail. Now, if Balor wins King of the Ring and Baszler wins Queen of the Ring, that gives the King to Raw, it gives the Queen to SmackDown, one babyface, one heel apiece. That's how I see it going down. But again, I'm trying to apply logic to an illogical situation, which is always my problem. That's always been my Achilles heel. I always try to apply logic where none exists. Edge came out at the end of SmackDown on Friday night to confront Seth Rollins, and they brawled until Rollins got away. And Edge challenged him to a match inside Hell in a Cell. He didn't say when, but it's since been announced on WWE.com for sweet Saudi money. Finally, a match actually worthy of Hell in a Cell as a stipulation. It's the perfect blow-off for this feud, especially as personal as Rollins made it by breaking into Edge's house on TV last week. Hell in a Cell is an appropriate stipulation for this feud. If only they didn't have an entire pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell only just a few months ago. So Crown Jewel looks pretty packed. They got the Hell in a Cell match, Roman Reigns defending the Universal title against Brock Lesnar, Big E defending the WWE title against Drew McIntyre, Goldberg against Bobby Lashley, no holds barred, with Lashley inviting Sunberg to attend so that he can beat him up again like he did at SummerSlam. Becky Lynch defending her SmackDown Women's title against Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. RK-Bro defending the Raw Tag Team titles against AJ Styles and Omos. And the finals of the King of the Ring and the finals of the Queen's Crown. I would be shocked if Mansoor does not wrestle on this show, so maybe this week they'll add a Battle Royal or some kind of multi-man, multi-tag team match possibly to the show to get him on there. The final SmackDown before Crown Jewel is this Friday. It is airing, as I said earlier, on FS1 because of the baseball game on Fox. It's the super-sized SmackDown from 8 to 10:30 p.m. They are promoting a Brock Lesnar appearance, Sasha Banks one-on-one against Becky Lynch, which is a big match, and Sonya Deville returns to the ring to wrestle Naomi. That'll be Sonya's first match since her loss to Mandy Rose at last year's SummerSlam, which was over a year ago. So that is the lineup for SmackDown this Friday.
You want a friend? Go get a dog. I don't give a...
We get to the young and hip NXT 2.0, whose median viewership age this week was 62 years old, according to WrestleNomics. These older folks sure do love their NXT. Sadly, I can no longer say the same. I honestly do not know how much longer I can stick with this show. I dozed off in the middle of it. Halloween Havoc is coming up in 2 weeks, October 26th. Tommaso Ciampa will defend the NXT Championship against Bron Breakker, who has been one of the great delights of this new NXT. That promo he cut on Ciampa in the ring when they were face-to-face, I love the intensity. It's too soon. I know it's too soon to put the belt on him. But part of me feels like, fuck it. He is one of the most interesting parts of this show. You know what? Just put the belt on him. Put the belt on him and let him run with it. Does it even matter? Does it even matter? It is a full-on developmental show now. It worked for Bo Dallas. I grew to love Bo as the delusional heel NXT champion. That was before the indie invasion of NXT. Now they're phasing that out. So I ask you, why not? I think we're probably going to see him on Raw or SmackDown in the not-too-distant future. I would not at all be surprised to see him called up next year. He just started. But a year from now, I think we're going to be looking at Bron Breakker on Monday Night Raw or on Friday Night SmackDown. So fuck it. Let him run with it. Put the NXT Championship on Bron Breakker and make it the Bron Show. LA Knight got a win. I couldn't believe my eyes. And a win over Odyssey Jones, no less, albeit due to some interference by Andre Chase. LA Knight should be preparing for his move to Raw or SmackDown next week, and instead, here he is, still on NXT. There were a pair of backstage segments with Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner that were as bad as anything I saw on television all week. Wagner was awful here. For all of the great things I've read about him in the ring and what they think of him and the high hopes they have, they see him as almost like an Edge and a future WrestleMania main eventer. Not on the mic, he's not. Totally robotic in his delivery. You know, if this wasn't the developmental show, I can't imagine they would ever have allowed this to air on TV. I mean, they pre-taped these segments. I cannot imagine if this were any other show. Because now, like I said, it's full-on developmental. So you're going to see bad shit like this more and more. Because these guys don't have the experience yet on television. But if this were any other show, and these were pre-taped in the back, I cannot imagine a scenario that Vince McMahon looks at this and allows this to air on television and does not demand that it be instantly redone. And it wasn't even just the dialogue they gave him. It was everything about it. These were very, very bad. Duke Hudson is a professional poker player now because everybody has to have a gimmick. So he's the gambler. One gimmick I'm digging, at least, is Tony D'Angelo. Stereotypical as it may be, and believe me, it is. He's making the most of it, and he's already over. We saw the in-ring debut this week of Tony D'Angelo, and the guy can go. You know, what little we saw here from him, the man can wrestle. He's a former NCAA wrestler in college. Joe Areola is his real name. With a name like that, he would have fit in perfectly at the Bada Bing. He was cheered like a total babyface, which I don't think is what they had intended, but the people have spoken. This guy is a made man. Either that or they were just afraid that if they didn't cheer for him, they may end up wearing cement boots and sleeping with the fishes. I'm on a roll. Indy Hartwell made short work of Mei Ying. For those of you who may have thought I was overreacting when I declared this Tian Sha group dead with Xia Li now moving up to the main roster, I'll say it again. It's dead. Rest in peace. Time to move on. And MSK retained their tag team titles in a four-way elimination match over the grizzled, let me say it the way they do, the grizzled young veterans. There you go. Sounds like he's trying to take a shit. Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams and Discount APA, Briggs and Jensen. I thought it was okay. that's really all it was. It was okay. I mean, we've seen MSK have some kick-ass matches. This was not one of them. Outside of Imperium, I'm not sure who that leaves now. This was an elimination match. They beat all three of these teams, and now I'm not even sure who that leaves to really challenge them in the tag team division, now that they've mowed down all three of these teams. I guess maybe it'll be Imperium, I guess. Bartel and Eichner. They have really killed my love for this show. But there's at least a few fun pieces, you know, Bron Breakker and even this Tony D'Angelo stuff. There's a few pieces to get excited about, but there ain't much. And there was other stuff that happened on this show, you know, Mandy Rose against Ember Moon, and there was some other, I don't care. I just can't bring myself to care. Oh man, you know what I do care about? I'll tell you what I care about. I care about your questions. And I want to hear from you. TheSoloMonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. There was one question I wanted to use, but the person didn't include their name or location. So I skipped over it. But Jad in London, England. I think most of us can agree that MJF cuts one of the best promos in the business at the moment. But CM Punk and Paul Heyman are two people who I think could at least match, if not better him. So my question to you is buy or sell on the promo battle that you would like to see more, MJF against CM Punk or MJF against Paul Heyman? MJF and Paul Heyman, no doubt, would be a lot of fun. I think it would be fun to put them together, even though MJF doesn't need Heyman. Imagine the two of them together. But I gotta go MJF and Punk. MJF and Punk is what I'm looking forward to. We're gonna get it. Just a matter of time. I don't know if it'll be for a championship or anything like that, but that's the match. That's the program, all the promos that we'll get on TV that I'm looking forward to the most. Chris from Phoenix, am I the only one bewildered by the split-screen pre-match Mark Henry interviews? They almost always feel pre-recorded, but with Henry live trying to remember the time cues. From a presentation standpoint, it's my biggest pet peeve with an otherwise consistently strong AEW product. What are your thoughts? No, I mean, they really don't bother me as much. I think it's probably a better role for him than commentary. It's you know, the right role for him to be in. I like the idea of doing pre-match interviews because it reminds me of the wrestling that I grew up on. When you would have those stand-up backstage interviews with a Mean Gene Okerlund or a Lord Alfred Hayes or a Sean Mooney. So I like the idea of doing pre-match interviews. His presentation, the way he does it, it does look a little, you know, rehearsed and scripted, but they don't bother me the way that it bothers you. I, you know, as far as big pet peeves, I wouldn't say that that's one of them. Julius from the Bronx, despite Mark Henry's move to AEW, The Rock being virtually unavailable most of the time, and the Owen Hart situation, do you think The Nation will go into the Hall of Fame at some point? No, I do not. When I think of them putting factions in the Hall of Fame, you know, we saw the NWO go in. I would love to see the Hart Foundation go in, though. I don't see how that's going to be possible. All the members of the Hart Foundation but one are dead. It's pretty depressing, actually. Certainly, they're deserving. If they're going to start inducting factions, they're certainly deserving of being inducted. I look at that as one of those things they do just for the elite factions. Like one day, The Shield being inducted into the Hall of Fame. The New Day being inducted into the Hall of Fame. The Nation, to me, as important as that group was to building The Rock into what he would go on to become, is not one of those top elite factions that I think I would put in there for their own standalone Hall of Fame induction. You know, Ron Simmons went into the Hall of Fame. The Rock is going to go into the Hall of Fame for a lot more than just being part of The Nation. Mark Henry in the Hall of Fame, right? I think he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm trying to remember the speech where he mentioned Owen, if that was him inducting somebody else or was that him being inducted? Now I don't remember. But The Nation being put in the Hall of Fame, I don't see that happening. Brian from Orlando, how would you rank Stone Cold Steve Austin's WrestleMania matches from least to most significant? Well, the least significant by far is his WrestleMania match with Savio Vega. Back when he was still the ringmaster, I think that goes at the bottom of the list. Unless you're only counting Stone Cold. Technically, he wasn't Stone Cold, I don't think. Was he Stone Cold? I don't think he was Stone Cold yet. I think he became Stone Cold in May. And WrestleMania was in March. But that one is at the bottom. And the most significant is Bret Hart against Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. And that image of him fighting out of the sharpshooter, trying to fight out of it, blood pouring down his face. It's an iconic image. I can't say that I think there was a more significant WrestleMania match for him. Even the first time he won the championship against Shawn Michaels, I would still put the match with Bret at WrestleMania 13 above all else. Daniel from Hamburg, Germany, which of these three matches would you have liked the most to see? Randy Savage against Bret Hart at WrestleMania 9 or 10, Undertaker against Eddie Guerrero at SummerSlam 2004, or CM Punk against The Rock against John Cena at WrestleMania 29. I would have to say CM Punk against The Rock against John Cena. It would have made for a much better WrestleMania match than the one we got. And Matthias from Paraguay. Look at that. All the way from Paraguay. Buy, sell, or rent on the best version of Kurt Angle in his WWE run, 2000 to 2001, 2003, or 2006. Can I say none of the above? I mean, Kurt was great in 2000, 2001, 2003, but where's 2002? 2002, Kurt Angle. I mean, he was a machine in 03, but he started really being a machine in 02. I mean, the SummerSlam match with Rey Mysterio, the tag team stuff that he and Benoit did against Edge and Rey, the other matches that he had that year leading into the beginning of 03. You know, he had a lot of big wins that year. Even the matches he had with Edge that really helped put Edge on the map as a single star. He got Hulk Hogan, babyface Hulk Hogan, to tap out. I don't believe that there has ever been a babyface Hulk Hogan match where he has tapped out. I think that is the only time in his career he ever did that. That was at the King of the Ring. So I would say Kurt Angle 2002 was just the fucking man. And Matthias' other question is, what does a match need to be considered a dream match? Dream matches are one of those subjective things where everybody's going to have a different answer. A dream match can simply be a match between two wrestlers who maybe are deceased. They are no longer among the living. Therefore, it would be a dream to see wrestler X step into the ring against wrestler Y. Some people would say that a dream match is just simply a match between two guys, whether they're dead or alive, that we never got to see. And they could be big names. Maybe they're not so big names. You know, maybe somebody would consider Mr. Perfect against Dolph Ziggler to be a dream match. You know, father against son. So dream match is completely subjective. I think of dream matches. I think of matches that I wanted to see and we never just, for whatever reason, had the chance to get it. A big match, like a Rock against Shawn Michaels, or Bret Hart against Kurt Angle, or Hogan and Austin in their primes, or Austin Goldberg even when they were both on top during the Monday Night War. It would have been exciting, I guess, to see them step into the ring together. So that's really how I would sort of view the whole concept of the dream match. If you have two wrestlers that you really liked, or even if they weren't favorites of yours, but you just think, man, that would have been a hell of a match. Their two styles would have matched up perfectly. Or this guy was a big star, and this guy was a big star. And wouldn't it have been great to see the two of them go head-to-head in the main event of a WrestleMania and see who would have gone over and who would have gotten the win? Austin versus Hogan, who would have gone over, right? Hogan against Flair back in the 80s, long before they ever had their first match, when Hogan was at the peak of his WWF run and Flair was at the peak of his NWA run, a lot of people would have considered that to be a dream match. By the time they got to it, it wasn't really as much of a dream match anymore. Totally subjective thing. But keep sending in those questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com, and I will, that person who did not include their name and location, I will try to respond to them directly. But try to include both if you can, because I want to be able to identify you for the world here. So we can we know who's asking the questions here. These are not just random questions coming in. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send those messages. Follow me on Twitter @Solomonster is my handle. That's also where I put up all the Twitter polls you hear me talking about on the live stream, so you can vote when I put those polls up for WWE and for AEW and whatever else I feel like doing a poll about. Members-only content, again, two new Q&A videos went up this past week, almost 90 minutes answering your questions. That is accessible for all channel members, regardless of what tier you are on. You go to any video, even the main page for the main channel on YouTube, Solomonster Sounds Off, you should see a white join button. That is the button to push. It will give you all the details, and if you want to join and become a member, it will take you through the process, and I do thank you for those of you who do. Sign up to become a member of our YouTube family. Of course, it is not required, but we have a whole bunch of people over the last couple of weeks that have signed up, and you've got more content coming your way that I'll be working on this week. I feel I'm working on stuff every day. I still haven't even put my notes down on Dark Side of the Ring on Johnny Canine, which I just watched yesterday. And that was a very interesting episode. So I'm going to try to work on that a little bit later and hopefully get a Dark Side of the Ring review up. If not tonight, then sometime on Monday. So a lot of good stuff coming your way, as is the case every week. I will not be live on Wednesday, and I should say, I will not be live tomorrow night either. Me doing a Raw review live this week was a rare occurrence. That will not be a weekly occurrence. I will not be live on Wednesday because Dynamite is bumped to Saturday. So Friday night, I'll be live. Saturday night, I'll be live. And then back for 7:26 next Sunday. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. You are going to be watching the new Halloween movie, Halloween Kills. Drops on Friday. Do enjoy it. I'll be watching that next weekend. I'm probably doing a review on that as well. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solo Monster sounds off.
Monday Night Raw is such an obnoxiously boring, uninspiring television show that if they want a hot shot, a Money in the Bank cash in and a title change and try to put something exciting out there for a change, maybe it'll keep me from dozing off by hour three. The show is fucking awful.
The Solo Monster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Solo Monster on Twitter at Solo Monster.
Solo Monster. Solo Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solo Monster sounds off.